Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. I hope you are enjoying a happy holiday and celebrated a very Merry Christmas. On today's show, I'm sharing two conversations from the more than 100 interviews done by Consider This Northumberland over the past year. The first is a lovely chat with Marcia Smoke, the Southeast Regional Chief for the Anishinaabeg Nation and a member of the Alderville First Nation. It took place back in August. Smoke is a longtime advocate of Indigenous rights. She takes on many of the pressing issues facing First Nations in her role as Regional Chief, supporting people like Alderville's Tainar Simpson and others. She is also a successful entrepreneur, a knowledge keeper, and a devoted great-grandmother. I am absolutely delighted to have with me today Marcia Smoke, the Southeast Regional Chief for the Anishinaabeg Nation and a member of the Alderville First Nation. Welcome to Consider This Northumberland.
Hello, Robert. It's very nice to be here with you.
Before we go too far, could you explain the role of a regional chief?
Well, it's a new role for me, certainly. And the Anishinaabeg Nation is the oldest political organization in Ontario and can trace its roots back to the Three Fires Council, which is a council that encircles the Great Lakes, goes in across the this invisible border that we call, and it's a council that has been in place for our ancestors for a long, long time. So the Anishinaabeg Nation is based in Ontario, and it's consists of 39 First Nations from Thunder Bay across the Great Lakes down into southeastern Ontario, all the way down to southwestern Ontario, and we are divided into four areas. One area is Lake Superior, Lake Huron region, southeast region, and the southwest region. And in my particular case, I'm the representative for eight First Nations that span right across south central Ontario from the Ottawa River, where the Algonquins of Pequawkinagon are residing, their territory all the way across central Ontario, over to Georgian Bay, up to where you have the Chippewas of Beausoleil First Nation and Moose Deer Point First Nation. So we've got eight communities in there, and my role is to be their voice at the Anishinaabeg Nation.
So how does this compare to someone like Tainar Simpson, who is the chief of Alderville?
Well, Tainar is actually the one that nominated me for this role. He is the chiefs are actually the ones that I am accountable to. They are the ones that will set the direction on what they want me to work on. At the same time, I'm a catalyst to bring any details of issues to them that maybe they aren't aware of or haven't been apprised of yet. And so what I do is I started a process where I can communicate with them daily if I choose, daily if it's needed, weekly, or just as issues come up. But my role is to keep them informed on the work of the Anishinaabeg Nation.
And how does your role relate to the Grand Council?
The Grand Council is the Anishinaabeg Nation. We have a Grand Council Chief who is Linda Dubosky, and she is from Chiking First Nation. We have a Deputy Grand Council Chief who is Chris Plain from the Chippewas of Anjanab First Nation down near Sarnia, Ontario. And then we have the four regional chiefs that have been selected for each of these regions. So we work as the regional chiefs and the Grand Council Chief and the Deputy Grand Council Chief. We work together with other representatives from First Nations as well. Core of what of the focal point for bringing issues forward to the chiefs.
How does this structure compare to traditional structures that you might have had in the past?
Well, the interesting part about the Anishinaabeg Nation is that they've gone through their governance form of governance, form of traditional governance, and they have created their organization based on the principles of our ancestors and what those traditional forms of government have been in the past. It's something new to me, specific to the Anishinaabeg Nation, but I am familiar with like we do have an opportunity to talk about what our hereditary chiefs process was in the past. We don't have that conversation too often because a lot of people don't understand it, and a lot of people really don't know what that hereditary system existed, how it existed in this particular part of the country. So, but it's there. It's always there among us.
What are the pressing issues in your mind that you hope to address as a regional chief?
Oh, there's I just came from a 3-day session with the Anishinaabeg Nation, and we had briefings on many different issues, anything from health to the child welfare system to mining, anything related to economic development. But the issues that are always on my mind have to do with the lands, have to do with our rights, our treaty rights, and then this whole business about our citizenship. I'm very much supporting any kind of action that will be on the table to address the long time discrepancies that have been in our communities, where some of our members are recognized and some are not, all due to legislation. And so citizenship is a big issue for me. And then mainly some of those core issues that touch the individuals. I've always been one that will walk with the people, will sit and listen to what their concerns are, do what I can do to help people along the way. So they're huge files because our citizen issue has been there since the Indian Act started. A lot of people were stripped of their rights. So we've got a couple good pieces of legislation that will open that door to recognize members who are recognize individuals who whose families or their parents or grandparents were their status was removed by government through enfranchisement. And there's now a piece of legislation that will restore the rights of those individuals and their families and their children. So that's exciting. And then of course we have some legislation that's been sitting on the books for a couple of years in progress, and that is to deal with the we call it the second generation cutoff of the women who have been reinstated as a result of legislative changes in 1985. So those are exciting things to come forward in the next, I think that we can make some progress on in the next 3 years.
Just for background, so people understand, is it not true that at one point, if a woman married a non-Indigenous man, that her status was stripped away? Is that what we're talking about here? Those kinds of things? Could you just clarify that a little bit for the audience?
Okay, there were two ways that are prominent in how First Nations lost their status. Okay, so in the women in particular, that was a result of the Indian Act. And yes, if a First Nations woman married a non-Indian or someone who was not, might have been a native person, might have been an Indian person, man, that was non-status. But they would automatically be removed from the Indian registry. So they lost their status. And that law changed in 1985. And the women and their children and their grandchildren were reinstated. But that's the second generation cutoff that we're talking about, because once you reach that, so any of the grandchildren now, their children are not entitled to be registered. So that's what we're hoping to correct. And then the other side of it is on the enfranchisement. The government was active back in well, I would say back during the when World War One, World War Two was on. Okay, so if someone wanted to enlist in the war, they would have to give up their status. And if someone wanted to go to university, they would have to give up their status. If an individual family did not want their children to go to residential school, they would had to give up their status. So we've got a lot of members or a lot of our relatives who are not registered because of enfranchisement. So what happened is, it could be a grandfather, a great grandfather back 50 years ago, 60 years ago. Well, once their children reached the age of 18, they were automatically removed from the registry as well. So none of the children of those who are enfranchised, the whole families were basically taken off the rolls. And so the enfranchisement part of the legislation that is there will reinstate those families, anyone who was subjected to the enfranchisement. So again, that is something that I don't think a lot of people are familiar with, because we don't have that many that are enfranchised. But if you have one family who had, half a dozen children, 8 children, 10 children, they were big families back then it is a significant population. So it's good.
So let's use that as an example. So this issue exists. How does your role then, as the Southeast Regional Chief, allow you to go forward?
Okay, so as I got into my role, as I made the decision to look at being a regional chief for the Anishinaabeg Nation for the Southeast, I've been approached many, many times over the years to help people resolve some of their issues or to explain what certain issues that are affecting them and their families. And I'm aware that of all the studies and the commissions that have been established over the years to deal with citizenship. And because of the fact that I've been around for such a long time working in our issues, I know a lot of the people who are heading up these commissions or given the work these to be able to proceed and find a good path where some results can be achieved. And a good friend of mine headed up the commission to deal with the second generation cutoff. So she provided her report maybe 2 or 3 years ago now. I'm not good on dates these days. Everything just kind of runs in together now when it comes to time. So I knew that she did a report for the government to deal with the second generation cutoff. That has gone through various forms of consultation with First Nations. It's gone through various forms of consultation with government, and they're at a place now where they need to hammer out how it's going to work. So the only ones that are really impatient about it are the ones who don't have their status. The ones, because there are so many issues that are before First Nations in their band offices, that this is something that just it's on people's minds, but there's so many pressing issues. So I follow these the workings of government and First Nations, and I am aware that they're now in a collaborative process to work with some of the provincial and territorial organizations to move this a little bit closer to a conclusion. So I raised that last week. This is how my role comes into play. I'm aware of it. I'm sure that others at the table at the Anishinaabeg Nation are aware of it as well. But I have the opportunity to be able to say, by the way, citizenship, we need to talk about that. We need to pay some attention to it, because this process is now in place, and we've got to be able to be involved in that, so we make sure that all of our concerns are met, and that these members that are going to be beneficiaries of this legislation are going to be able to achieve the results they want. So I can do it both ways. I can facilitate what I hear from government and bring it to the political table. At the same time, I can communicate with First Nations that I represent and say, by the way, I raised this at the Leadership Council meeting last week, and I believe there's some merit in being involved in this, and I will keep you up to date. So, and then that the First Nation then becomes aware of the that it's there's potential for development here, because maybe they're aware of it, but sometimes you have to push the timelines just as reminders, because you're not going to get pushback from people that want to see good things happen, but it's nice to have that reminder there. And that's where I can be involved, and I can follow the process. How my role ventures into that actual process is yet to be seen, because I've just now raised it. I hope that should I be the designated person to deal with the question of citizenship, then I will have a more active role with those that are involved in this collaborative process.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds to me like Chief Taylor Simpson, he is very involved in what's going on in Alderville and the issues directly impacting Alderville, how they're going to get a new framework for voting for council or policing in Alderville, or those kinds of sort of grassroots issues in front of the people that he's serving. Whereas it seems to me you're a little bit more out there doing larger picture things, things that are moving on a little bit of a broader scale, and being able to track those and make sure that agenda keeps moving forward. Is that a fair assessment, or have I missed something?
I think that's fair, and it's mainly because the there are so many issues that affect people on the ground that I'm sure his text messages are blowing up, his cell phone, his emails, because there's always something going on. And at the same time, he brings to the table something that I am really appreciate, because and that is the Indian Residential School issue. I have been working on this. My husband was a survivor of three Indian residential schools, and this has been a part of my life, for the last 40 plus years in my, with my husband. But back when I first went to Toronto to school, as a teenager, the people that I met all had this common denominator of being residential school. So Taner, while I'm living with survivors and among survivors, Taner has the expertise of background as a lawyer, as a researcher in the residential school processes that with government, with the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, with the National Center for Truth and Reconciliation. He has that expertise. So it's really, really nice to be able to, talk to someone in the community who understands. So all that to say that while he's dealing with community issues, he still has that expertise to be called on to work on these broader issues. And as a chief, they come together at tables, whether it's the Anishinaabeg Nation, the Chiefs of Ontario, the Assembly of First Nations. They are up on the issues anyway. He is very familiar with the national issues, but because there's so many, I mean, you can't take them all on. That's why you have other people around, resource people to carry the load, help carry the load.
How would you characterize the path towards reconciliation taking place in Northumberland?
How would I characterize it? Well, I think that I've been fortunate to be able to work on that with my family since moving back home. When I moved back home, I just kept to myself, just to get grounded here, figuring out what I was going to do. Then I noticed that there was not a lot of communication with people outside of the community. I started reaching out to people that I knew that actually were from my world outside, like when I was in Toronto or when I was in Ottawa, who I knew had moved to the Northumberland County, moved to Cobourg-Port Hope area. So I was in contact with them, and then I got invited out to, lunch and, here and there. We've been able to work with people that share a true interest in reconciliation. And from an educational perspective, and how do we support? So I think that we take the seeds of those interactions and build on them. We just did two events yesterday or on the weekend, and one was in Cobourg. I got to share our story with newcomers to Canada. There was a venue where people were brought to learn about First Nations. And then yesterday, our second time back at Wesleyville, the Friends of Wesleyville invited us to do a cultural day. We did, and people came out, and they got to sit. We took our teepee, our teepee travels that it was put up in Wesleyville. People were so amazed to be able to sit in a teepee and hear our knowledge keepers talk about different things and sit in those sharing circles. And we had some women that came to join us from Curve Lake First Nation that were able to use their beautiful voices to sing and drum, and so as we continue on with the work to share our messages, it's getting broader and broader. More people are coming out. And now, we've got an event out here in Alderville on September 15th with the Northumberland Arts Council group. And then on September 30th, we're going to be in Port Hope. That'll be our third time that we go to Port Hope for September 30th. So we've got the opportunities are starting to become more. And what's really, really positive about it is that our chief here, Taner Simpson, is making that his door is open to having people come and talk to him or invite him to be involved in events. And he goes, and that's what's really good, because now people across Northumberland County see that the door to the chief's office is open, and good dialogue could take place, and learning experiences, and to learn from each other how each other can be helpful.
Marcia Smoke, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you, Robert.
That was Marcia Smoke, the Southeast Regional Chief for the Anishinaabeg Nation and a member of the Alderville First Nation. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.